Well, welcome to Lights in the Night on BBS Radio. This is Russ Johnson, and glad to have you here. This is what they call the maiden voyage. Well, here's the first program on this vast network of stations, 185 stations in 37 countries. So here we are, and we have a wonderful guest today. We are going to talk about UFOs. We're going to talk about aliens, you know, their activities, their presence, their influence, and even contributions to humanity. And I think we want to use the word ubiquitous, meaning that it's all over the place. That means everywhere, always present, and distributed vastly, if you will. Now, just like the millions and billions of cells in the human body, there are millions and billions of galaxies and planets in the universe, and we want to talk about a specific one, the Earth, and what's happening here. There seems to be a lot of conflict lately, and we have Gillian Green. Now, she's from the UK. She was born an intuitive and a clairvoyant, and she has incarnated dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of times on planet Earth. Her recent incarnation, well, she was born a clairvoyant in Yorkshire, England, and she has written three books, and she manages to keep abreast of all the things that are happening with the Galactic Command. And Gillian, all the information that I just mentioned, they can find about you on www.nohoax.net. She was married to George Green, who was very prolific, a researcher and a writer of alien and alien activities. Welcome, Gillian. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Russell. It's a pleasure to be here. And I think it's going to be at least interesting to some people, because it's your first show on this network, and that's always exciting to be doing something for the first time. So I'm looking forward to trying my best to answer any questions that you or any call-in person puts to me. And I will do my best. No matter what the question is, I will try to answer it for them. So just go ahead with whatever you want us to talk about, Russell.
Okay, well, you certainly are capable. Listen, I mentioned that you have been incarnated dozens and dozens and dozens of times. So in a three-minute scenario, could you tell us about the first time you arrived here and why you keep coming back over and over and over again? Why?
Well, the first time I ever came to Earth is hundreds of thousands of years ago, when I came as what would now be classified as an alien, a different non-human species, coming to this planet for the first time. And I was here for a very, very long time in the body of an alien being who did not readily die. So I lived many thousands of years on this planet before I actually experienced death, which was about 10,000 years ago. And from that time, I incarnated back on the planet to try and share some of the information that I had. If you like, I was like a teacher of some kind, but very junior school. You know, often people have the idea that because someone is an extraterrestrial and living on this planet, they must be super advanced, have superpowers, and be just like they are in the movies. You know, they can do everything. But that's not necessarily true. In fact, when I came to this planet to live, the last time I came as a non-human was about 14,000 years ago, and I was just a teenager in equivalent times. I might have been alive thousands of years, but in their way of counting time, I was no more than a teenager. So when you ask me, what do I know? Well, I know what your average teenager would know, and probably not a great deal more. But since then, I've had several incarnations as an Earth human, and I keep coming back for two reasons. One, to try and pass on information which I have to my fellow humans, and the other is, of course, to work on myself and try, like everybody's doing, to learn and to grow myself.
Well, out of the 9 billion people here on planet Earth, at the present, 9 billion or so, give or take a few, why do you keep coming back so many times? And do you think there are other entities like you who keep incarnating back on Earth after they leave?
Well, the reason I've kept coming back is because if I go back into my own history, I'm attached to or part of the race of the Anunnaki. And the Anunnaki were responsible for the genetic development of the then humans several thousands of years ago, and did the genetic engineering, which ultimately ended as Homo sapiens sapiens, in other words, modern man. They did the original engineering that brought about modern man, although it is true to say that many other alien species have tinkered with their human DNA since then. But the basic change, the leap forward in history, was brought about by the Anunnaki. And the Earth human today is very similar in many, many ways, in all ways, in fact, to an Anunnaki. We look like them. We are like them. Our culture is very like theirs. So we have a strong attachment above all other races. Our closest attachment is to the Anunnaki. And as such, I keep coming back because as an Anunnaki, I have responsibility to the present humans on planet Earth today. And humans are a remarkable race. You know, they've only been modern humans in charge of themselves for 5,000 or 6,000 years, and yet they've advanced as a species further and faster than any other known development in the universe. So it's interesting to be here and to see how quickly they have evolved and moved forward, both in their spiritual and in their intellectual development. It's a fascinating place to be. And it's also, certainly in this quadrant of the universe, the most beautiful planet that there is. None of the others equal in beauty, natural beauty, planet Earth, with the mountains, the rivers, the streams, the oceans, all the plethora of animal life and flora, all the flora and fauna. We are a magnificent planet, and there really is nowhere like Earth. That's why everybody wants to come here.
I see. The Anunnaki, when they came here some, let's say, 400,000 years ago, and I think for the people who want to read that history, would you reference Zachariah Sitchin's book, The 12th Planet? Would you recommend that book?
Yes, all Zachariah's books, and yeah, he did several. They are very interesting, and they do a good representation or documentation of the history of the Anunnaki in context with the people on Earth from the time they came to Earth, long before they developed humans. They were coming to planet Earth, and it's a tight old history. And in fact, it goes all the way back to Atlantis and Lemuria. The Atlanteans, the early Atlanteans, the original Atlanteans, were also Anunnaki. They were a subset of the same race who were living on the planet before it all got blown up, and they couldn't get back again. So for them coming back to Earth hundreds of thousands of years ago, that was a return to Earth. It wasn't their first time here. They were also Atlanteans, and they were obviously connected with the Lemurians in that historic time, which is a very long time ago.
Yeah. The question is, why would they come to Earth? I mean, what did the Anunnaki seek 400,000 years ago? What were they seeking?
When they were here at the time of Atlantis, of course, they were here for the very reason that we go and visit the beautiful islands of Hawaii, because it was a beautiful place to live. And by the time they got round to Earth, the Anunnaki had been going round the universe from the very beginning. We have to remember who the Anunnaki were in the first place. They were the third of the angelic beings that were sent to Earth by the creative source, whoever or whatever that was, and were meant to be like administrators and record keepers of the development of our universe hundreds of millions of years ago, right? And they were beings of pure spirit. But as they tied themselves more and more and more to the physical creation, they became more dense, and they eventually arrived at a point where they were actually making homes and living physically on planets, just like we live on this planet. And at some point in their ancient history, they had discovered planet Earth. And so they lived here, and that developed into the time of Atlantis, and maybe even before that. I don't have any recollection before Atlantis. So I do know that about 400,000 years ago, they came back to Earth, and they almost immediately, well, within a few thousand years, began the development of Homo sapiens. It was about 400,000 years ago that they started developing the science labs in what is now East Africa. And once that site was chosen and the development started, the work on the genetic engineering began, because they were mining for gold. And as you know, there's a lot of gold in Africa. And their own astronauts, they'd been using their own military, essentially, to mine for the gold. And they were mining. They did not have any monetary value on gold. They were mining it because they had a problem in their atmosphere, similar to the one we have on planet Earth now, where there are holes developing in the ozone layer. There's a hole in the North Pole area and the South Pole area of our planet now. And they had a similar problem on their home planet. And they were working with the idea, because gold is an inert material, it's non-magnetic, it doesn't deteriorate at all, that they were going to suspend that gold, powder it, and suspend it in their atmosphere to shield them from the radiation of deep space. Their planet, another name for their home planet, is the crossing planet. You know, everybody knows it as either Nibiru or the 12th planet, but a common name is the crossing planet, because it actually has an orbital path all the way from the Seven Sisters down into our neck of the woods, round the back of our sun and back home again, like a figure of eight loop. And that orbital path of theirs takes 3,600 years. And so they pass through deep space, and they are exposed to a great deal of radiation. So that was why they were on Earth. That's why they came back to Earth, to mine for the gold, because they already knew it was here from the time they were here in Atlantis. And so the military, the Air Force, actually, the Ajiji, their astronauts, they got fed up with mining after a long, long time. And so they developed the existing upright hominid species that were on the planet, which at that time would be about the period of Cro-Magnon man. And Neanderthal man. You still had the tail end of the Neanderthal. But they decided that they would develop these existing human species to be essentially workers for them. We would call it today slave labor, but it was done in the same context as we train horses to pull carriages and so on. So they were trying to domesticate. Well, that didn't work, so they did the genetic engineering. And that worked eventually, after many, many thousands of years of trying. Eventually, they developed Homo sapiens sapiens. And they not only found that they made excellent workers for the mining, but that they were super intelligent, creative, inventive, imaginative, all those qualities that are the best of humanity. And so they started teaching them everything else. And you saw that sudden flourishing of civilization in Sumeria, in the Middle East, very, very fast, very advanced. And we have continued to advance under our own steam, if you like, as human beings on this planet ever since. The Anunnaki actually left here. They had the gold they wanted. They were, quite frankly, fed up with humans, because they were breeding too quickly, and there were too many of them, and they were tired of having to administer them and look after them. So they left. They left this planet, or it must be 4,000 years ago, roughly. And didn't come back. They haven't been back yet, but they are coming back. They are returning.
Why are they coming back?
Well, they're coming back because they think that humans have moved. As far as I can work out from what they tell me on what I can pick up on this matter, my understanding is that although humanity, left to their own devices, have advanced rapidly, incredibly fast in cosmic terms, right? We've done in 5,000 years what most civilizations in the past have taken 5 million years to achieve with our technology and everything else. But they see now that we're moving into, for instance, allowing artificial intelligence to take over in place of human thinking and human decision-making, that we now have machines, computers, that can talk among themselves, advance themselves, and make decisions. And that the Anunnaki are certainly not happy about that and very concerned about it. And they have this connection because they were the original developers of the present species. We're like first cousins to the Anunnaki. It's not a way that they want to see a subset of their own race going. And so they are very concerned because of this, because we have not kept up with the same level of spiritual advancement. If we had, they have sent teachers throughout the ages. They have sent one teacher after another to instruct us. You know, Confucius, Buddha, Kuan Yin, you name it, all the teachers you can think of throughout history to keep us on a right spiritual track so that we grew spiritually in the same way as we grew with our physical abilities, our strengthening of our bodies and our minds. And we just haven't kept pace spiritually. And the last great teacher, they sent one of their own who was, you know, the one we knew as Jesus Christ. And it's only 2.5 years, that's a long weekend to them, right, that they sent him down. And we not only as a species pretty much rejected him at the time, but we have not followed his instructions since that time. If we had followed the instructions that these great spiritual teachers, the last of them being Christ, if we had followed their instructions, then when this point in history arrived, which we're at now, which is we're coming into a cosmic change, right? When this time period arrived, we would have no longer needed this three-dimensional physical reality. We'd be all of us ready to move up a step into a higher, more evolved form of living, into a higher dimension of experience where we didn't have all the physicality that we have now with all the problems, you know, all the pain and suffering it brings. We would have moved beyond that, but we haven't because we didn't follow the simple instructions we were given. So we're still stuck back in this third dimension. Meantime, and here's the problem, meantime, right now in history, we are coming to the end of the time cycle that is the feature of the cosmos at the moment. In other words, the whole cosmos, not just Earth, but everywhere, is realigning itself for a forward movement. And we are not ready, most of us, to move forward with it. Everything is moving. So we will no longer have this reality. Let me put it this way. The time allowed for humanity on this earth is running out. Our time frame is ending. I'm no bibliophile, and this has nothing to do with religion. It's to do with really cosmic science. But somewhere in the Bible, it speaks of a time and a time and a half in reference of that which is allowed a species to evolve, to develop, to do whatever it's doing. And Earth is running out of its time and time and a half. It's had that time and time and a half, which is roughly 7,000 years. And so we have used it up because Earth time began hundreds of thousands, millions of years ago, right? And we're only a blip on the very end of it. And we have moved and evolved very quickly. But
so
we have
people,
not evolved spiritually.
Let me do this. For those people who want to do research, again, are you saying that any writing by Zachariah Sitchin will help them to catch up to speed?
Yes.
About the Sumerian civilization and what he discovered before.
And Zechariah Sitchin, because he tells the whole story of the Anunnaki, how we went down to South America and traveled on the west coast of America up and down, and the connection with modern, the Indian race, you know, the Indian people of Western America. But there is another book as well, if people are serious about looking into this matter of development, and that's the Emerald Tablets of Thoth the Atlantean.
Oh, didn't Billy Carson write a compendium to the Emerald Tablets?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think if you
the Emerald Tablets were written by Doriel, translated, I should say, by Doriel. And it's published under that. I don't know anything about Billy Carson.
You don't know Billy at all?
No.
For those people who are listening, you can go to number 4, Bidden Knowledge. It's a podcast that Billy Carson has done. And he has hundreds of thousands of listeners who follow him. And he did write the compendium to the Emerald Tablets, and I believe it's number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list worldwide. But people can check that out. Because I want people to do their homework themselves. I mean, would you agree that people, because we've been lied to, deceived, as and I'm talking about William Tompkins. You know William Tompkins, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And William Tompkins, he's just passed at 94, but he met with the alien species back in 1938, 1939, 1940, and they helped him design those spaceships that are going throughout the universe as we speak. A lot of people don't know about those yet, but I would suggest that if you want to look at that history, look at Selected by Extraterrestrials by William Tompkins. He has volumes 1, 2, and 3. I think the second volume talks about how he discovered that everything on this pretend planet, this prison planet, this outback of the universe, has been so that we have been deceived because and dumbed down. Would you say some of that is true?
Yes. I love the way we are at the back end of the universe, because we're at the bottom end of the Milky Way, and there's not much out past us for sure. And it is true that Earth has been used as a prison planet by many species. Once the Anunnaki found a way through the asteroid belt that was blocking entry to this planet. Once they found a way through, that opened up the planet yet again to all the other species. And they started using Earth much the same way as old-fashioned Britain used Australia. You know, you sent your convicts there. Well, they sent their convicts here. So that's why we have so many species on this planet from different races in the cosmos. Prison planet.
Give me a number. How many species do you think are here? 12, Russell, 13, 14?
You've asked me this before, I don't know. I know there are 5 main categories of extraterrestrial development civilizations that have used this planet, that exist in our quadrant of the universe and have used it. It's not hundreds and thousands, it's 5. I know that there are maybe 2 dozen species who regularly come to this planet, and probably another dozen species who just do a flyby every now and then to see how we are doing. So altogether maybe 40 or 50 different developed species have involved or have interaction with planet Earth.
Can we talk about but some?
Can we talk about them? Well, as far as I know anything about them, yes.
Let's talk about the grays. The grays, when we look at the historical record of chameleon, of Dr. Jacobs, taken by Steven Spielberg, and Taken is a 13-hour miniseries by Steven Spielberg that I would encourage anybody who doesn't understand what we are talking about to get. It's 13 hours he wrote and produced for television, and you can, since it's not, you can get it if you go to Amazon and get the whole box and view it. But have you watched Taken by Steven Spielberg? Miniseries?
Yes.
What do you think about it?
For anybody who is not really familiar with all the alien interaction, it's a very good miniseries. It does a great job. And what it talks about in my area of knowledge is absolutely correct. I would say that movie is like more than 90% accurate information.
Okay.
And that's a lot. But about the books, Zachariah Sitchin's books, I would say they are 98% accurate. Because they're not giving an opinion. They're just giving you translations of documentation, which is still available on the planet to this day. You know, clay tablets from Ashurbanipal's library. There's thousands of those, and Zachariah Sitchin was one of only half a dozen scholars in the whole world who had the ability to translate those. Since he died, unfortunately, a lot of people have started coming out and saying, oh, well, maybe this translation wasn't correct, all that. But I was told by my sources, upstairs sources, that you could trust what Zachariah Sitchin said, because his translation was 98% accurate.
All right. Who are your sources? Who are your sources?
I have off-planet friends, you know, as many people do, and they communicate with me, and they are Anunnaki, and they communicate with me. So
then you are saying you communicate.
Now I have George, of course. Many of your listeners, I dare say, are familiar with my late husband, George Green, because he was all over the place.
Let's talk about that for a minute. So, because people may want to reference that, if you go to George Green and you Google that, or you go to the website that he left a couple of years ago, which is nohoax.net, www.nohoax.net, you see the books that he has left. He was, talk about his history. He was out there for at least 70 years, 80,
oh,
almost 80
no,
years.
No, no. George was 79 when he died.
But what
happened with George was he was a developer. He was building, constructing buildings all over the country. And he was a developer in a major way in his younger days. And he was invited to a position with the government when they explained the position that they wanted him to fill and invited him to Washington to their meetings. And he sat in the meetings with people like George Soros and Ted Kennedy and all these kind of people. And he went to the meetings with them to discuss this job they wanted him to do. He spent some time in Washington with them. And he came to realize that everything that he had ever believed about the government and the way it worked was just one big fairy story, and that none of it was true. And he was so shocked by this that he decided he would try and find out some of the truth for himself. So he started a small publishing company, publishing books for whistleblowers, where the big houses like Random House and these publishers would not touch these whistleblowers' books. books like, Corey, what's his name? You know, Corey what's it? And all the early stories about the moon base, the base on Mars, and so on and so forth. These stories kept coming to George, and he was publishing these books in the early years. Now, that must be, well, I know exactly when it is. It's 40 years ago. It was right at the beginning of the 80s, because he'd had the company just set it up a year before, and I met George in 1982, I think it was, 82 or 83, somewhere in there. And he just started this publishing company then. And through that, he found out all about the alien stuff and the UFOs. So he went and spent time with Billy Meyer in Switzerland. Billy Meyer's the one who is famous for producing all those spaceship photographs that were out in the hills in Switzerland. And through Billy Meyer, George was contacted himself by two extraterrestrials, Pleiadian extraterrestrials, I might say, or at least they were claiming to be Pleiadian. And they asked George to put together and publish a couple of books for them, which he did. Handbook for the New Paradigm and Becoming and something like The Rainbow. And these little handbooks were actually written by the Pleiadians, and George simply published them for them.
All right. So he was in contact with the Pleiadian, the aliens called the Pleiadians. Is that right?
The Pleiadians. Right. That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
So did you ever meet any Pleiadians, or you met any Greys? Did you meet any reptilians? Did you meet any Nordics?
I didn't meet any of the Pleiadians that George knew. I did meet the Greys. That's an interesting, for me, it was an interesting experience. And it's a good example, right? When I came to America, I started doing classes in metaphysics for people, introducing these subjects to them. And I always used to say to them, you know, the spaceships are very interesting, but don't step on the first one you see. Find out who's driving it first. Because, and I would really stress that, because when I was young, I was nursing at the local hospital, like an auxiliary nurse, right? Before I did general training. And I was young. I was maybe 19, 20. And for 2 years, these beings would come and ask me at night, would I go and help them? And they would transport me to this location, which I found out years later was a base at Dulce, an underground base at Dulce, right? But I didn't know that then, and I was living in England. And I would go with them many, many nights, 2-3 nights every week at least, for 2 years, looking after these patients who were in, like, hospital beds in these long dormitories. And I was working away all night with these people. And then come dawn, they would take me back to my room, and that was that. And for 2 years, I was tired all the time because I was working all night. But I didn't realize until long afterwards that these were the Greys, and they are really bad news. They have not got our best interests at heart. They were using these people experimentally. I was so naive because I didn't have, yes, I was a clairvoyant and I had all this memory and all this inbuilt information in my head that I was just born with, but I had not done any research into the situation I was in.
Okay.
And because of that, I was misled. So
okay.
I'm anybody who's listening, pay attention and find out who you are dealing with.
There may be people who may want to call in and ask a question or two of you, and so the lines are open for that. If anyone has a question, because you indicated that Dorsey was an underground base, so in Lake Titicaca, I mean, I mean, we can go on and on and on. There are underground bases below the pyramids all across the broad spectrum of the planet. Is that right? That entities
right.
live. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And belong to different groups. They
okay.
don't all belong to the same people. That's why I'm saying be careful.
But a lot of people can't even fathom the fact that there are other entities from other parts of the universe here. That's one. Two, that they have bases under the pyramids or in Antarctica or under Dorsey or Lake Titicaca. It's hard for them to believe all of this. Do you understand?
Well, yes, I understand that. But that's why I'm saying, you know, check, do your research. Now, a great book to read, in my opinion, one of the best, is the book by Dr. Michael Salla, S-A-L-L-A, Dr. Michael Salla. He lives in Hawaii, and he has researched and written a pile of books, but the ones that really I liked best, because I thought it was best information, is called The Secret History of Antarctica.
Okay.
Now, that book is well documented. He's another like Sitchin. You can believe what he's telling you. You can know it's true because he's documented it. He's
okay.
got photocopies of government documents, et cetera, et cetera. And that tells about the massive underground bases under Antarctica that are now run by the Fourth Reich, the Germans, the reptilians and the Pleiadians.
Okay.
Those are the three under there.
Tell me, how did the Germans get to be, you know, von Braun,
well,
Hitler? How did they get to be there in Antarctica in 1940?
Okay. This starts with, as like everything else on the planet, it's this ancient history.
Okay.
For thousands of years, the reptilian race, the draconian reptilians, they're quite different from the little reptilians that live on Earth, right? But the draconian reptilians from the star system Draco had been trying to get down to planet Earth. And for thousands of years, the Anunnaki have been at war with them, keeping them off our planet. But when the Anunnaki left, the reptilians were able to get down here. Not a lot of them. Not a lot. A few hundred. But you have to also realize that the reptilian as a race are one of the most advanced spacefaring races in the universe. They're technologically super advanced, and they're all over the universe. But they also managed to get a few hundred down onto planet Earth. And they knew from their own geological findings of this great cavern system under the ice in Antarctica. And that's where they made their base. Now, in World War II, a couple of years before the war ended, when Hitler realized that he was going to lose, let's say after D-Day, you know, we all remember D-Day, June 1944. After D-Day, Hitler could see that Patton was going to chase him out of Germany and he was going to lose the war. So he kept dragging it on and dragging it on and used that last 2 years of the war in Europe to transfer his heavy industry and the slave labor that he was using to work in his heavy industry, with the help of the reptilians, to Antarctica. The reptilians showed him how to get submarine ships, giant submarines, in under Antarctica, under the Antarctic shelf, the entranceways, and how to get in there and set up shop. So they did that by 1946. Hitler was set up in Antarctica. Now, this is one of the things in Dr. Salla's books that he has very well documented. Government documents, signatures, photocopies, you name it. It's not imagination. It's not a fairy story. It's actually documented history, right? And so they are massively embedded there. And the Pleiadians are also in Antarctica. So essentially, the Germans, really, they have been running most things with the help of the reptilians in places like Argentina, Brazil, and up into the Americas, and in the USA, because our army, not the Navy or the Air Force, but our army, works with the Germans.
Okay. So when I talk about Lake Titicaca, what's under that?
Yeah.
That's in Peru.
Okay.
What's there?
Okay. Lake Titicaca. This is what happened there in about, as I said, roughly 4,000 years ago, 4,500 years ago, when the Anunnaki left planet Earth. Marduk was in charge of the Ijiji, and Marduk is half-brother to Thoth. And Marduk did not want to leave Earth because he had married an Earth human. He had a family. And despite all the bad things that are generally written about Marduk, he's a real family man and a great administrator. And he simply did not want to leave. And his Air Force, men in a similar situation to himself, they didn't want to leave either. Now, it was Marduk who had banished his brother, half-brother, Thoth, to South America, to the area that is now Peru, right? And when they were all leaving, Marduk brought his Ijiji over to Peru, and he said, well, you've got such a great base here, we're going to stay here. And they built an underwater city under Lake Titicaca. And that was the Air Force, the astronauts of the Ijiji, of the Anunnaki, who were called Ijiji. They went and lived under Lake Titicaca and are still there to this day.
Okay.
And they... go on.
Go ahead. Go ahead. And they... Go right
here. I was going to say, and they have been responsible for some of the abductions of humans ever since. Not all, but some of the abductions.
So the abductions are continuing then?
Well, since 1998, they've pretty much stopped.
How can a person tell whether he or she has or has not been abducted? You say you were abducted and you were taken to Dorsey, the underground base.
Yeah, I wasn't abducted. I don't think it's in the same sense. When you say abducted, that usually refers to something against your will, right? I was never abducted against my will. I was just asked if I would go and said yes, because it was an adventure. That was so. I never went anywhere.
Follow me on this, because I think we're getting close to the end of the hour, another 5 or 10 minutes. But Dr. I'm thinking in terms of the psychiatrist who was doing a lot of it, Dr. at Temple University. It kind of slipped my mind, but anyway, there's so much history that he's saying that when you were a child, some kids say playing with the alien species and not realizing that they are aliens, have given permission when they were 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years old, and that stays in play even when you're an adult, because you had given your permission early on that you will allow yourself to be abducted. Does that go on?
Probably. I don't know how he's come by that information, but I would say that it's highly probable. You know, when you think of how many people spend their life saying, well, I agreed to come here, or
right.
I agreed to do this, or I agreed to do that. We all agree things at the subconscious level.
Okay. The name I was thinking about, Dr. John Mack, for people who want to do research, Dr. John Mack, in his book, when he was teaching, books that he's written. But go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt you. I'm sorry about that. Go right ahead.
No, that's fine. Because, you know, this is one of the things where... I I was going to say one disagrees, and I can't say that. I have to say where I disagree with the organization of the universe, if you like, because we do make agreements and we don't remember that we have made them.
True.
For example, I am very conscious now of the fact that I made an agreement off planet that I would return to this planet for the next 300 to 400 years, because a new genetic engineering is going on to help our species, and there will be chaos on this planet over the next 2 to 5 years. Things could get very bad, and a lot of work will be needed to bring it back up. And for the genetic engineering to spread through the human species, it's estimated it will take 300 to 400 years. So I have already made the agreement. Well, I will stay to work with that during that 300 or 400 years, and because I understand it, I will stay to help with it. But
so you have to leave and come back again then?
Yes, exactly. I probably will. I did go back and sort of do an addendum to my agreement that says, yes, but I'm not having another body like this one.
Oh, so you're not going to go through the birth canal then this time? You're going to Are you going to do a walk-in?
No, I'm going to just come up and down as needed to do the work.
But you understand walk-in when I
down off the ship.
There's some aliens who have the capacity to walk into bodies and take over the body. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But that's not satisfactory if you've got a specific job to do. It's a difficult situation, because when you do that, you also have to live out the life of the person whose body it was, as well as trying to do your own work on top of that. So
yeah,
walk-in is not a great...
You know, I think we're coming close to the end of the hour. I'm looking, I think we have 55 minutes, and look like we have 5 left, according to my timing. But the Don can let me know what time I have left. But to wrap up, Don, do you want to tell me what time I have left? Anyway... To wrap up,
you have 8 minutes.
8 minutes, okay. Operation High Jump. Let's talk about that briefly, because when we talk about Operation Paperclip, which allowed thousands upon thousands upon thousands of German scientists after World War II to come here and take over NASA and all the space industry, is that right?
Yes, well, there weren't thousands and thousands. There might have been a couple of thousand.
There are at least a couple of thousand.
They are still in control.
May I say?
They are pretty well. The Germans, their choices, their descendants, their corporations, if you like, pretty well run our space industry, our air industry, Boeing. Things like Boeing. That's, in fact, the man you mentioned earlier, Willis, you know who I mean.
Don Brown?
No, the American that worked with the Pleiadians. He was with Boeing Air.
William Tompkins.
William Tompkins. His history, the book you talked about with him, he explains all this, and this is the Germans taking over our aeronautics industry, our pharmaceutical industry. They run up there. If you look at the boards of directors for all the big pharmaceutical companies, indeed, if you look at their names, Bayer and Bayer and Pfizer, and these are all out of Germany originally. These are all German corporations.
Sorry.
And so... it's all now pretty well, most major things in America today are run by the Fourth Reich.
Okay.
The Third Reich, the Fourth Reich. Well, the cabal is 90% made up of the post-Hitler regime, and they still are Nazis today.
Right,
They are. Many of them still belong to the Nazi Party. You know,
people think that
the Nazi Party went away with the Nuremberg trials, but it didn't.
No.
I knew some people when I was in Indonesia, and they were Nazis, and they were very open about it. They said, no, we believe in this philosophy, that there should be an elite few and the rest are slave labor. And that's really how we are now. We're the slave labor.
Of course.
I would like to finish up on a more optimistic note, if it's okay with you.
But I wanted to cover that history because people don't know that history.
Well,
everybody is sleeping. We've been dumbed down.
Yeah.
And we don't have information. And we've been lied to and cheated and deceived.
I know.
Okay.
But we also have the way out of it. Right?
Okay. All right. You have a couple of minutes. How do we get out of it? Let's go to positive notes.
Well, by going back in our history, 2,000 years ago, to some teacher who came and said quite simply, treat your neighbor right, love yourself, love your neighbor, love God, right? Fill your life with goodness, and everything will work out well for you, because you will have eternal life. And so even if there's a mess going down here, it's very temporary. Everything in this three-dimensional world is short-lived, it's transient, it's temporary. It's not going to last, right? So no matter how bad it gets, if you are choosing to live right, in whatever way you view that, by doing what you believe is right, and rather than doing what's expedient, then by the time you get to the end of a few short years of this lifetime, you're going to be sailing. It's all good.
Would you say the book Saving Jesus would be a big help for us to read?
I would say that book by Dr. Ledwith, L-E-D-W-I-T-H, Ledwith.
Yes.
His book, Saving Jesus, is probably the most valuable book that's been offered to humanity for 20 years, because it tells you, it gives you a complete understanding and a simple instruction that enables you to get everything right in your life. It's a wonderful book. I wish everybody could read it.
Well, listen, you have materials that you have written, ETA and others, the Violet Flame.
Yes, but they...
Okay, but that's on the website, nohoax.net, along with George Green's other materials that people can download. And that
material was all for beginning people.
Okay.
The book, Chalice of the Dove, is a useful little book for somebody interested in metaphysics and is really wanting to learn.
I really appreciate you being on and sharing the information that you have garnered over your 80-some years of being on this planet this time. And so we'd like to have you back again with more discussion and in-depth discussion about the positive elements of what we should do and how we should do it, so that we can go from level 3 to the fourth or fifth or beyond dimensions. Okay?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, Russell. It's been a pleasure as always. Goodbye now.
Okay, but thank you, Don. I think that we're at the end of the time, but my website is www.lightsinthenight.org for you people who want to just see other interviews that I've done with other people who have great knowledge. Thank you, Don. I appreciate the time that you have given us. Thank you, sir.